we start today's episode, just to let you know, you can now nominate for the 2025 Northern Power Women Awards to be in with a chance of celebrating with changemakers, trailblazers and advocates on the 6th of March 2025. Nominate now at wearepower.net.
Northern Power Women Podcast. For your career and your life, no matter what business you're in.
Can you believe it? We've made it to the end of another year. It's December and welcome to episode 30 of the Northern Power Women Podcast. How to outwit the dinosaur boss. I'm Sam Walker, and this month we were back at the University of Bradford discussing when to say no to requests for advice, how to engage men in the fight for equality, and dinosaur bosses and how to avoid them.
Successful women, the kind of language used in banking when I started was that successful women were ball breakers. And that was the vernacular, that was the language being used. And actually you had to be an aggressive man-type person as a woman to be successful. That is changing, but we do have a long way to go.
The big interview is with Kate Rogers, who's a senior HR business partner at the University of Bradford. She talks about the power of transferable skills and also shares her passion, getting us all talking about the menopause and how it can affect our working lives.
I started to experience really bad symptoms this year of menopause transition. I got to the point where I was actually starting to think, should I be looking up early onset dementia? I was just forgetting things all the time, just didn't know what I was saying sometimes. And I was just like, oh my God, I've forgotten things. And what is it all about?
In Ask the Hive, our listener has had a few jobs in quick succession, but hates her new position. What should she do?
My opinion on this one is that if you're really unhappy, it's better to just leave. I think you'll be able to pursue your passion and have more success in a new job.
But first, let's catch up with the founder of Northern Power Women, Simone Roche MBE, with some news from HQ.
We had a brilliant morning in Bradford recording episode 30 of the Northern Power Women podcast. It was the second of our sponsored episodes with the University of Bradford, and a big, big thanks to our panellists, Aisha Al-Khan, Vicky Clapham from Velvet Marketing, and our host, Mark Garrett from the University. It was a really, really lively series of conversations, which you'll hear shortly. And a big thanks to Kate Rogers, too, for being our Person with Purpose interview. We look forward to seeing you again in the new year. What a November. Saw keyboards across the north and beyond going into overdrive. We received a record 1,480 nominations. Such a massive drive in all of our categories from all of our regions and sectors and backgrounds, telling phenomenal stories of brilliant role models in the north. As I said, it's the biggest amount we've ever received. So thank you so much to everyone who took the time to celebrate awesome role models. And thanks all of you who were nominated for completing your questions. I know sometimes it's that struggle to write about yourself and high five yourself, but so that's what it's about. We really want you to celebrate and own your responsibility as a role model. And now it's a massive good luck for our 60 plus judges who are coming together across all of the different category groups. We have different judges for each category to debate and discuss the merits and the successes of these fantastic nominations. So good luck to everyone who has been nominated, and absolutely good luck to all of the judges. Don't worry, I'll be supplying you with chocolate and fruit and water and coffee, wherever it needs to be able to celebrate our fantastic role models. As well as being at the University of Bradford, we've also been at the University of Manchester, where I was hosting roundtables on leadership and culture. And then I was on a panel with the Jonathan Warburton and also the fantastic entrepreneur Nisha Katona, founder of Mowgli Street Food. And then I was on to the University of Liverpool, it's like University Fest this month, where I was delighted to be on a panel at the town hall with the women's organisation and the RISE programme, talking about entrepreneurship, and a brilliant debate and discussion we had. Lots of international students in the audience as well, so brilliant to engage with them. It was International Men's Day on the 19th of November, and we launched our Agents of Change campaign looking at positive male behaviour. So watch this space in the new year, because we'll be telling you more about what we found out and what we're going to celebrate. We've also launched a partnership. It's the first of its kind with Lancashire County Council, demonstrating Lancashire's pioneering commitment to female founders. It's going to be a 12-week programme comprising of mentoring and practical working, and it's going to be totally fully funded. So if you're employing 10 or more people, then get in touch and we will let you know how you can get involved in this really exciting programme. But we're really, you know, very excited about that, as we always are. But keep an eye out during the month of December for our advent calendar, because we're going to be celebrating what another impactful year we've had for Northern Power Women. And then we're going to look forward to seeing you in the new year. We're going to kickstart on the 8th of January. Not only will we be hosting the next in our series of role model events with NatWest, we're also going to be unveiling our 2020 shortlist. So please all have a fantastic Christmas, have a wonderful new year, have great celebrations. It's been a fantastic year. Thanks so much for sharing with us. Thank you.
As ever, a huge thank you to Simone for everything she does. Absolutely brilliant. And here is to Northern Power Women in 2020. Now, each month we get together somewhere in the north to chat, network and discuss some of the hottest topics around. And this time we were back at the University of Bradford. What an absolutely brilliant discussion it was.
Welcome, welcome, welcome to the University of Bradford. And this is, can you believe it, episode 30 of the Northern Power Women podcast. And we're here again at the fantastic University of Bradford. It's our second visit here, and this is the second in our series sponsored by the University of Bradford. And we're really grateful to be back in this fantastic city. And it's sunny. When I left Liverpool this morning, it was hoofing down. It was biblical. Today, it's absolutely fantastic. As ever, we are going to be starting the conversation across the North today. We've got three wonderful panellists, which I'll introduce you to, and an equally stellar audience. And we're going to be discussing three different questions. But first, with no further ado, let me introduce you to Aisha Al-Khan, who created the Women's March London. She's a local activist and women's rights campaigner who has worked hard to highlight the dangers of NDAs, non-disclosure acts, especially when used to cover up allegations of sexual impropriety by successful businessmen and politicians. Surely not. Today, the government has announced they will seek to ban this practice after Aisha launched a petition last year in the wake of the scandal involving Sir Philip Green, which currently stands at nearly 150,000, worth a round of applause in itself. Mark Garrett, follow this. Well, I think he can. Since 2013, Mark has been the Director of External Affairs for the University of Bradford, right here, where he leads a multi-award-winning international team. Flashy, hey? He has further developed his strong stance on gender equality, leading the 50-50 by 2020 marketing campaign to get 50% of the computer science cohort to be women by 2020, as well as leading the Athena Swan accreditation for professional services. He recently nominated two women colleagues who are now Northern Power Women and was himself the recipient of the Male Change Agent of the Year at Forward Ladies Regional Awards and will be shortlisted for the National Awards. Congratulations, another round of applause, I think. And Vicky. Vicky is the Managing Director of Bevic Marketing, a chartered marketeer. Vicky has worked in marketing and communications in-house for 18 years. You don't look old enough. Across a variety of sectors, including retail and the media, working up to director level, but left the corporate world 2 years ago following the birth of her second child and launched Bevic Marketing Services last year. Congratulations. Vicky has recently been named a finalist in this year's Northern Marketing Awards. My goodness, a real... an amazing, amazing bunch of panellists this morning. So thank you so much. As ever with Northern Power Women podcast, we are going to start with our first question. As new research from the Young Women's Trust shows, dinosaur bosses are not yet extinct. Those who won't hire women if they believe she will get pregnant. How can an ambitious woman who wants to start a family protect her career prospects? Vicky, I think I'm going to come to you first. Having just about come back and started a new business with a family of two young children.
Well, I think ultimately, if you want to have a career and have children, you can do that. Do you know what I mean? I don't think it's an either-or situation. I think if someone's unfortunate enough to come across one of these relics, you know, I think that's an alarm bell as that company's probably not for you anyway. You know, now we're looking at organisations and companies having a much more inclusive, flexible policy towards, you know, parenting and working. So I think really, ideally, you wouldn't be wanting to work for a company like that. And that they will eventually die out because people aren't going to want to work there. But I think as a woman, you know, when you know you're going to want to have children but a career as well, it's really important that you create a supportive network around you. You know, I'm a big fan of the saying, it takes a village to raise a child. And I fully, you know, subscribe to that. I couldn't have my career without the support network I've got through family and childcare and things like that, and a great husband and friends. And I do think that is part of that package. So as much as you've got that ambition, you know, which is fantastic, you know, you do need people to enable you to follow that ambition as well. That I think that's kind of important to do.
And I think Dame Carolyn McCall, who led EasyJet and is now CEO of ITV, she used to talk about that. She used to talk about it was as much about her professional network as about that network that she had at the nursery, the school gate, that could enable her to do things that actually she might not be. And she looked at WhatsApp groups were the most important things at times. Mark, I'm coming your way.
Well, my advice, at the risk of giving advice to women, is I work for a large, complex organisation. I've worked over 32 years for lots of large organisations. But my advice now, if you're looking to work for an organisation, you should do a whole lot of due diligence about the way they operate. You can find a lot of information about the policies, flexible working and the like, and it's important that you do that due diligence as well as having an interview process. And actually, I always find if you ask people, when you ask searching questions in interviews of the person that's going to employ you, you'll get a pretty good answer around the way they operate. Emma Bridge, who's my associate director for marketing and communications, has just come back from maternity. And throughout that period, we've had lots of conversations around the things that she's experienced, the discrimination she's experienced, and she's challenged us as an institution around our flexible ways of working, particularly dealing with maternity. We have just recently appointed our first ever woman vice-chancellor, and things are changing. Simple things. So our executive team meetings that we have now every 3 weeks don't start at 9 o'clock, they start at 9:30. We've started to see, you know, we're all looking at ourselves, because we're not perfect, we're all looking at ourselves around what are the things that actually you really can just change. But if you're looking to work for a large organisation or a small organisation, very much look at the whites of the eyes of the individual. You'll find out whether they're a dinosaur very quickly. I mean, I always say I've worked for 19 bosses in my 32-year career. There's been 10 women and 9 men, and the line I always give is the only bad ones have ever been men. I've never had a bad woman boss, and that's despite the fact that when I started out many years ago, successful women, the kind of language used in banking when I started was that successful women were ball breakers. And that was the vernacular, that was the language being used. And actually you had to be an aggressive man-type person as a woman to be successful. That is changing, but we do have a long way to go.
And it is language. We've talked about language before on the podcast and about the style of language. But please, you know, the podcast is about joining the podcast. Hashtag NPW podcast at North Power Women if you want to be part of this conversation. Now, I know you're going to add to this one, Aisha.
I really don't know how to add. Both answers have been so good. But I kind of come from an educational background. I come from teaching secondary age kids, and one of the things that I was basically taught when I was growing up was you can have it all. Mm. And the reality was, when I actually tried to enter the workforce, that wasn't the case. And I realised that now when I speak to young people, both boys and girls, it's to temper the expectations. So that's number one. But also, when we talk about dinosaur bosses, we always assume, we've got a stereotype, haven't we? These are middle-aged men, sort of male and pale and sometimes stale. But the reality is, a dinosaur boss, there's no gender. I've come across female bosses who, like Mark said, with they've adopted certain male characteristics to fit in and to get ahead, and then they've internalised those and they don't recognise the needs of their work staff. And we've got to move away from this top-down type of leadership, because that is really out of fashion. But until we get rid of those people at the top, we're not going to change the narrative. And certain industries that are male dominated anyway, like tech, IT, engineering and so on, those are the industries that women struggle to get in anyway, because they've got a massive image issue. And when they come to actually hiring and going for jobs, then they come across as bosses. So it's a self-fulfilling prophecy. So then you can't get women in, because when they do go for interviews and so on, they come across as these bosses. So I think we need to start talking about it, which is what we're doing. But we also need to temper expectations and also be realistic. I mean, I know the government's put certain sort of guidelines in by 2020. We're going to have this, this, this. That's next year. First of all, I don't know where the time's gone. That's not going to happen. So we need to start revisit those timings and so on. But I'm sure it can be done.
And I think hearing what you said, Mark, since Shirley, the VC, has been in place here, it's the small things. And I've done a bit of work recently, and it's absolutely about, as opposed to doing that big, massive, moving a mountain, boiling the ocean, which I do try and do quite often, but, you know, sometimes it's about, why can we just not do 1,000 smaller things? Because the sum of all those parts can add up to what makes that movement and what makes that change. Any thoughts in the audience? Anyone has encountered or has actually slayed any dinosaur in the audience? Oh, Sandra, I knew straight away. Hold on, Sandra.
No, I think for me it's quite sad, actually, because obviously when I was younger, it was the... You could ask the question, are you going to have a family? And then it was, where do you see yourself in 5 years? Where do you see yourself in 10 years? And I was involved in sex equality working parties. And I agree with, you know, Mark's remarks, you had to be ruthless to be a woman to get on. I don't always think women helped other women. But I do think, and a lot's not changed, you know, all the issues around childcare when I go to events, they're still there, the issues that were there when I was in my 20s. And as I say, it's sad for me to hear that those are still the issues.
But we can, that's how we come together to do so. Just hold on a second, I'm going around the back here.
I suppose I'm in a privileged position because I run my own practice and I started up that business before I had a child. What I'm finding now, I have a one-year-old who's born on Saturday.
Oh.
It's like he's practically a teenager. is I don't care. I take him everywhere with me. He comes to see my clients. He comes to meetings. Where it is appropriate, sometimes some meetings it isn't appropriate to have a one-year-old there. But most of the times, he just comes with me. The response has been fantastic. My clients get it. And I'm of an opinion, like, if they don't get it, then they're clearly not a client for my business. But when I've done things on a bigger scale, so I've done some judging, some industry judging, and 2/3 of the people around the table were male surveyors in nice sharp suits. I turned up with a baby. I've never seen a baby being passed around those chaps quick. They loved it. And it's almost like if women can help break down those barriers, equality for women is equality for everybody. And I know there's loads of men out there who'd love to be able to have more flexible working for their families, that they don't want to be screwed down to these really tight regimes. They want to spend more time. Unfortunately, my partner has a very flexible boss who completely understands family life, so we've managed to make it completely work together.
And that sounds like that's the culture of your business that you're building. You're setting that out straight from the start. And at the last podcast that we had here in Bradford, we had Emma. You talked about Emma Bridge. We had Amelia here. She was actually on the podcast, the one we did 2 weeks ago in Newcastle. We had young Charlotte, who was 9 months old, on the podcast. So they're getting younger, these stars of the North.
Well, the award you talked about, Emma was up for an award as well, and she brought Amelia to Newcastle. And it was an eye-opener for me, just actually the whole experience of getting on the train, watching Amelia, you know, kick off as young kids do, and people observing it. It was a real, real eye-opener. But then she turned it and she sat through the whole awards ceremony. And I could still feel, though, even there were mostly women in the room, were looking, going, oh, my God. I could see people being scared about, if I did that, and the answer was, oh, you're so brave. We've got to move on from you're so brave to that's just normal.
It's allowed, right? I think, and one of the reasons when I set Northern Power Women up back in the days is I remember doing an event and I went to this research kind of post-evaluation of it, and I spoke to this very senior exec chairman who we're having this conversation, and he went, Simone, the problem with women is, it's a bit like my same accent as I did for Rob before, I know, but Simone, the problem with women is they get pregnant and you can't recruit or promote them. And I'm like, you know, you kind of do that face. I know you can't, it doesn't work on a podcast, that does it, that face, but there's a jaw drop in here. And from that moment, I knew from that moment, which was 2 months in advance of me launching Northern Power Women, that I had to go out and collect the men. I had to go out and collect the dinosaur slayers. So when we created the awards the year later, there was a category around agent of change, because it was massively important that we tell the story. And I do get, we get berated sometimes for, why have you got men included? Because actually, as like you just said, it's not, this isn't equality for you, is less for you. It's not pie, right? It's, you know, it's all about that. But this leads us, it's like swiftly onto our next question. So congratulations, Mark, recently won a Male Change Agent Award at the Forward Ladies Regional Final, and good luck in the National Final. But what, in your view, is a man's role in challenging gender equality?
Well, how long have we got? I mean, the headline is, I think, and my experience has been, is that it has to start in the home. So the role of the man and the role of how you address your children has got to be the place that that men have to start. It's not actually in the workplace to start. So whenever I get asked to speak a lot about this, so my daughter, I was the first to go to university. My daughter was the first woman to go to university, and clearly way cleverer than me because she got a first-class honours degree, so the first one to get a first-class honours degree. And all along, she was encouraged to do that. But the interesting thing is my 13-year-old boy. So he, very early on, he knows what an iron looks like, yeah? He's got a very keen interest in cooking. Yeah, he's got a number of women siblings, but he is being brought up in a way to treat everyone equally, and also in terms of diversity. Unless it starts there in the home, and the narrative of the man in the home isn't that's woman's, all that sort of stuff that you hear, right? That's where it has to start as the first thing. In terms of the workplace, I've got six directors work for me, three are women, three are men. And Hannah's in the room, and she might disagree because she works in my directorate, so it'll be interesting to see her perspective on it. But flexibility is the thing that I absolutely have encouraged from the start. So when I came here, a number of my directors for many, many months kept saying, oh, I need to work from home. And in the end, I just said, can you stop asking me? Just stop. Just roll with it, have flexibility, and I'll let you know if I need to get a hold of you. Yeah. So flexibility is probably the one word I think men in the workplace, if they could get their head around it and allow that to happen in all its guises, would be a great thing. I think there's a variety of men. I mean, we talked about dinosaurs. I mean, as some of you know, we gave an award back, the university did, a number of years back, and Aisha very helpfully exposed it to the world and the individual in question, which I'm not going to go into, but actually, it's making statements like that, making a stand. I did a bit of very sexist, misogynist award ceremony. And the next day, it was a no-brainer. We're giving the award back. It was an absolute no-brainer. And my boss, who's a man, and his boss is a man, it was absolutely. So sometimes you have to work even harder, I think, as a man, to make those stands. And that's the role you can play. So I think flexibility and actually really making more of a stand. Because there are some good guys out there.
Especially good guys, and I think so. Both of those things are about being deliberate, right?
Yes,
it's not about going, oh, we might, or we can, or we should, or we'll. We're gonna be absolutely purposeful about this, Aisha.
Gosh, some of the things Mark's already touched upon, and it's really strange actually hearing it from a man who is a Muslim, who is a Pakistani, from a Pakistani background, because we see this all the time. I saw this all the time growing up, where the gender sort of roles were very defined. Girls had a particular role. The boys in the family, they did what they wanted, but the rules and sort of like strict guidelines were just for us. And I've spent a lifetime sort of battling against those, and it does get tiring sometimes. But my son's now 16, and sometimes I describe him as the biggest feminist I know. He's even more of a feminist than me. I don't know how that is possible, but it is. And when he was young, like the lady in the audience, I struggled with childcare. So I thought, sod it, I'm just going to take him with me. So he has been on loads of rallies. He's been on loads of protests. He's been to loads of meetings. He's been all over the place. I once went to a media interview in Paris and I took him with me. And so I just basically accepted that I've got a child. I was 22 when I had him, so I was fairly young. And I wasn't going to let lack of childcare stop me. And I just got on with it. And at that time, people would look at me and think, oh my God, you're either really brave or you're really nuts. So now I look around and it's a lot more, I mean, there's some of the issues are still there. We haven't really moved on. But a lot has actually changed because a lot of people, their mindsets have changed. But going back to my son, I've always tried to be extra because he doesn't get that at home. He doesn't get that in his dad's family. All the aunties and grandmums and everybody around him, very traditional. They stay at home, they cook, they clean, they have children. They don't go out. And that's not a criticism. That's just reality. And I want him to see women that are strong, that are feisty, that have an opinion, that are not scared. And I want him to think that's normal. But I can only do this if I model the change I want to see. And so that was my attitude from day one. And obviously it put me at sort of loggerheads with my now ex-husband. But I don't regret that for a second, because ultimately, if we want to see change, long-lasting change, we need to invest in our children because they are the future. And it's not just girls. I mean, I can go into any kind of school or do any of the talks that I do and say to girls, come on, don't give a damn. You can be what you want to be. Don't let any voices in your head put you down or try to demean yourself or whatever. But if we're not giving those messages to our sons to accept these strong, feisty, powerful women, we won't see any change, and we'll just see girls battling like I've had to battle. And I do think that society is slowly moving on. And I do think I was in Lebanon just a few weeks ago and I spoke about the imposter syndrome, and we just don't talk about it enough. But there's always a voice in our heads constantly telling us all the time, we're not good enough. Or, are you sure about this? If we get a prize or an award, I think I was telling Vicky this, immediately we think, oh, have they made a mistake? I'm sure this is meant to be for somebody else. So we need to take those voices and sort of put an end to them. But we can't do that until we recognise those voices are there.
We need to own it, I think, is what we do. So, but Vicky, how do we like really encourage men to feel more passionate about raising up women, and why that agents of change is important?
I think it's, as you said, it's including them in the conversations. Meghan Markle recently was part of a round table about equality, and she said, I think as Harry crashed the party apparently, men need to be part of this conversation. It's important that they're part of this conversation about, promoting women's equality. And I think that is part of it. You know, we cannot do it on our own. Do you know, only change will happen if men do appreciate and understand and are part of that change. So I think that's part of it. And, like, you know, it's great that we have these female spaces where we can, you know, champion each other and support each other. But likewise, I think there needs to be those opportunities where the men can get involved as well and be part of those conversations.
Absolutely. Any experience, any great male change agents in your world, in the audience here? Oh, Hannah, no pressure. Your boss is in the room.
So I think there's two men that I have to mention. So Mark is obviously my boss, and I am...
Good call.
Very good call. And I have an 18-month-year-old little boy, and since having my little boy and coming back to work, I have had that flexibility to be able to... I need to leave work at 4 o'clock for childcare. I go pick up my little boy. If I need to do work after he's gone to bed, I can do my work and my boss is happy that I'm doing it. I think the other person is my partner, because actually he's giving me that support as well. So we did shared parental leave. So I did 6 months and then he did his 3 months. And it's about him being able to take advantage of policies at the... We are lucky he works at the university as well. But it's taking advantage of those policies that are available to men to be as active in the role of being a parent as the mum is.
And I think that's really important. And the more we can talk about shared parental leave and those and celebrating people who are doing it, because it's something like 2.8% or something. It's really low, really low. Sorry, did you have a comment?
I suppose it's kind of similar in the sense of my son is a year, and my greatest ambition is to bring Joseph up as a good, strong feminist. And I'm really keen. Like, the whole bookcase is kind of, you can read it all. But yeah, and it's great role models. I'm in a male-dominated industry, and not once did my dad say, "What are you doing?" He's like, "Go," like pushed me forward, and being this massive, massive advocate. And again, having a partner who I don't cook at all, and he does all the cooking. We've never once had a conversation about housework. We know, we just automatically just shared our duties. It never crossed our minds that there'd be another way to do it. So I'd like to think that Joseph is hopefully going to be part of that change.
Absolutely. So actually, in our household, I do all the cooking. My husband does all the cleaning. And right back in the early days, he went, "Simone," it's the same accent as before. He went, "Simone, I think I'm better at that than you are the cleaning." And I'm like, "Oh, love. Really? Okie dokie." Right, we're on to our final question. So Britain's first Black History professor, Olivette Otele, tweeted about being continuously asked for advice and mentoring this month, and set out some boundaries for her advice and free time. Studies show that successful women, and particularly women of colour, are disproportionately asked to give advice and their time for free than successful men. How should you deal with the demands of this nature, and how best to ask a successful person for advice or support? Aisha?
Gosh, if I could actually look back at all the times I've given, you know, helping people, and I've not minded, but when you kind of think about the comparison, a similar person like myself who wasn't from the same background as me, would they give that level of time, and would they accept not being paid? It's actually quite interesting, because a lot of it comes back to our need to basically feel that there's a justification for us to be in these spaces in the first place. So we're always trying to please, and we're always trying to apologise and so on. And again, these messages are from a very young age. I mean, I'm the daughter of migrants. I'm a granddaughter of refugees and the daughter of migrant workers. And so there's always been this thing, you know, do I belong here? Is this country mine? And as we've seen in the last couple of years, and I promise I wasn't going to mention the B word, but it has opened up a lot of conversations around belonging and so on. So I do think that being a Muslim, Punjabi, Pakistani woman, we're constantly being asked to give our times, because people think, you know, they're not going to ask for money. And if you do, you're kind of made to feel guilty. Oh, you want money for it? You want paying for it? And we have to break those narratives.
Absolutely, I couldn't agree more. Vicky?
Yeah, when I saw the question, I kind of looked at it from the perspective of someone who potentially was looking for like a mentor or help, that kind of thing, and approaching people. And I've got to say, I think I would encourage people to approach someone. You know, I think everyone thinks, "Oh, no one would be interested in helping me or talking to me." And I think that, you know, you'd be surprised actually how many people will be willing to give you a little bit of their time to help you on your journey. Do you know, I think it's what Aisha says is right, in the sense of you're being asked to give your time to speak at events and to, you know, support organisations, then people shouldn't be expecting that for free. But I think there's a difference when someone comes to you who's really wanting maybe to pursue a career, or maybe the start of their career, and they're looking for someone to kind of mentor or support them. I would encourage people to get in touch with someone. Don't always expect a yes. Do you know what I mean? People are busy. But, you know, I've shared many a coffee with someone, you know, when they've wanted to, like, pick the brains and wanting to kind of just get an idea
what an industry entails or that kind of thing. And so for that reason, I would say get in touch with someone. Don't be scared of getting in touch, but you might not always get the answer you want, but it's worth actually putting it out there.
I think sometimes it's the difference between paying it forward. You know, sometimes we're all time poor as well, aren't we? And I think it can be about timing of where you're currently at and where you're, you know, and actually what you want to do as, you know, sort of your side hustles or such. So, Mark, any top tips around this?
Well, of course, we're sat at a university. There are only around 12 black women professors in this country of 136 universities, two of them at the University of Bradford. My reflection on Professor Udi Archibong and Ngobo Mese is that they get a lot of people come to them for mentoring because there aren't that many. And this is part of the problem. So you've got not enough role models. And I mean, I absolutely agree with what Aisha's saying, but in our world, people are clamouring to talk to those role models, but there's not enough of them, is the headline. Now, at the end of the day, people have got to pay bills and mortgages and the rest of it, and we've got to make sure that there is parity of accessing people's time in a way that works. But I think the biggest issue is there are not enough role models like Aisha and Udi and others. And so therefore, people that are pioneers are going to have a lot of people want their time and in some cases for free. The challenge, of course, is making sure that there's parity around that pay. I mean, I've become kind of quite pally with a guy called Jason Mohammed, who's a BBC reporter. He's a journalist, yeah? He's one of the highest paid, but he's had a very tough journey, Pakistan father, Welsh mother. And, you know, I'm trying to encourage him now to come and be part of our story here. But I'm very mindful of this question around paying him versus, or not paying him versus paying someone that's not from his background. So it's not an easy one.
And is it not sometimes about having that honest conversation and being a bit upfront and go, we're trying to do this? I know we've done things around Northern Power Women, Northern Power Futures, you know, where you kind of have to go, I can't do this. And I think I sometimes get annoyed when it's a very, very massive corporate and they go, oh, but they'll get profile. Oh, hey, that's brilliant. That'll pay for my pret-a-manger.
That's exactly what I was going to say. I mean, I've been a teacher 15 years and I've come across kids and even on social media I'll have people contact me, and that's not an issue when they're trying to find their way forward. And you want to help them because you want to pull them up and you want to give them some advice and support because it's an unknown journey for them, and they look at you because they see that you've gone through that journey yourself. But like you've said, when you've got organisations like the BBC, for example, or certain universities, when they've got the funds and they've got the means to support people, and they just refuse to do it. And that really annoys me because it's not just myself, but it's other people who are maybe in a less better off position than myself who can't afford to take a day off and go and speak and so on. But they're expected to give up their time for free because, like you said, they're getting something in return, this profile. But they don't need the profile, they need to pay their bills.
Do you think we just have to have a more concerted attempt to ask and go, I'm going to ask, and then we can make a decision, right? Does this actually fit our profile? Is this okay? Is this a nice to do? It's hard, right? There must be experience in the audience of this. Yeah.
I suppose coming at it from a different point of view, from recently changing from working in a charity sector to working for an organisation, for a business, is that I found myself on the other side of it, of wanting to steal, you know, embrace other people's knowledge and skills from a place where we go back to imposter syndrome, we'll talk about it earlier, won't we? But I think sometimes people are frightened of sharing their knowledge, they wonder what it's about, a little bit frightened of how it's going to be used. And I suppose if someone's looking for a mentor, I reached out to one of my old heads of service, and it was just from a really specific point of view and setting my intention. I think sometimes we're trying to figure out what people are saying, and particularly if it's an email pinged off or on LinkedIn. And I think it's really important that if you're going to ask for advice or support or mentoring, understand what your intention is and put that forward, and also do a bit of research. People are going to know, you know, it's quite obvious if you're just plucking someone because you want to use their profile to grow your own business or your personal brand. So it's about being authentic and genuine and coming from that good place of pooling our knowledge together, sharing that to be your whole authentic self.
And I love that intent. I was talking in a meeting about that sort of earlier this week, and you've got to be really purposeful with that rather than just ticking a box. And For anyone who knows Northern Power Women, it's 100% everything's about role models. So everything that you're saying, Mark, about, you know, UD, who we had on the podcast on the last episode, is rightful, and Aishu must be the same. I want you, I pick you. But I think one of the things that we can do is we all have that responsibility to be, one, a visible role model, one, to sponsor, as in, you know, bring that person up and from the side and go, why don't you speak? Why don't we pluck you out the day before and put you on this podcast or whatever it may be? Because actually we all have a responsibility to be a role model, you know, and whether it's in a space like this or whether it's in front of 1,000 people, I think it's massively important.
That's a really good point. I was going to mention this earlier on. So we gave an honorary degree to a lady called Professor Cilla Elworthy in July this year. And she was one of our alumna. And she's a big peace negotiator academic. And she came up with a statistic that said, if in peace negotiations 30% or more of the people negotiating are women, the longevity of peace is 3 times longer. But one of the questions she was asked, we were doing the interview with her, was how do you bring people with you? And she came up with a really simple technique, which is if you've got 2 or 3 women, and she was saying this in the peace context, but it could be in any context, if you've got the CVs or the biogs of 2 or 3 women that you believe deserve a chance, always carry them around in your top pocket. Literally have people that you, don't just talk about it generically, have people you know are really talented. So when the conversation comes up, you go, there you go, try those.
Call them out, celebrate them. And on that note, we have had an amazing morning here. What a conversation. A long conversation. We could have gone on forever this morning, but please do, as ever, keep the conversation going at North Power Women, hashtag NPW podcast. Thank you so much for our amazing panelists, and thank you so much for the University of Bradford. And we will see you in the new year, Bradford. Thank you so much, Bradford.
Just such great conversation. Big thank you again to our wonderful panel and to the University of Bradford for hosting us. And to you, of course, if you came along to take part. We do love to see you when we're out and about. So do keep an eye on Twitter at North Power Women for details of our next recording. Got loads of other events going on as well. And if you'd like to host us, we'd love to come. Do get in touch. podcast@northernpowerwomen.com. Now, this month's interview is with a woman who's worked in the same field but across different sectors in her very successful career. Kate Rogers is a senior HR partner at the University of Bradford and has been doing some incredible work around something that can affect our confidence, our short-term memory, and our mental and physical health. And it's something most of us will have a tough time with at some time or another. The menopause. Before we talked about her work in this field, I asked Kate, who was born in West Yorkshire, about her move south to start her career.
I went south, kind of was an opportunity to head down with my job, and that's what I did, and then took advantage of being in the south and basically the career opportunities to me there. I worked along the M4 corridor in Berkshire, where there's a lot of big companies, and into London as well, down in Canary Wharf for a bit.
It's kind of frustrating in a way that there is still that north-south divide that, as you said, you had to go south to take advantages of those opportunities. Is that, do you think that's shifted, though, since you made that move?
I think it has. I mean, I've moved back up and there are a lot more career opportunities. You know, the bigger companies are up here. You've got Channel 4 has only recently just moved or moving to Leeds. So you've got big companies relocating up here. So there's actually a lot more opportunity in the north.
So tell me a little bit about your career, because you have worked across HR for your career. Why did you choose that path? Why HR?
I just really enjoyed the kind of the problems and resolving stuff, actually getting to a situation where you can try and resolve things that kind of wins for employee, wins for managers, and sorts out a situation, whether that's a business problem and going through organizational change or actually a personal problem that somebody's facing, actually helping to find a solution. It's all about solutions, and I find that fascinating.
You've worked, as you mentioned, for some really major companies and some major brands, been throughout your career, brands like Amazon and Vodafone, HSBC. Not to discuss those companies specifically, but in your experience, when you've worked across so many different organisations, do you feel that historically organisations have treated male and female employees equally? Because there's so much discussion around that. As someone who was in the HR department, did you ever see that?
I think yes. I mean, you know, I went into HR 30 years ago. Definitely there were differences, but I think that's equaling out, and there's much more thought around inclusion and individuality. Yeah. And actually, rather than treating everybody almost the same, it's actually trying to treat people better and individually. And it's being much more inclusive as a workplace, rather than actually sort of saying, that is it, that's what we want as an employer. It's actually sort of saying, actually, this is a combination. This is us working together. And how can we do that? How can we get the best support to you and help you achieve your best? If you achieve your best, we as an organisation are going to achieve our best.
That's interesting, because historically as well, we think of big corporations as always separating life and work. When you're at work, you're at work. I don't care what goes on at home, it's work time, not personal time. And now it seems there's a bit more blurring of the lines, where even really big corporate companies are realising that what happens in people's personal lives has a massive impact on what they do at work.
It is, though I did see that change happening. So when I was working about 10 years ago, I was working for Oracle, and they actually had a flexible benefits package where you actually chose the benefit. You basically got a pot of money and chose the benefits that work for you. So for me at that time, that meant I could, rather than having a car, I actually could choose to pay my money towards nursery places for my children. So that really supported me being in the workplace. Yeah. And I think we're seeing a lot more organisations moving towards that, not necessarily flexible benefits, not everybody can do that, but that change has been coming on for the last, I think, 10 years is when we're really seeing a shift in organisations thinking about the flexibility and thinking how they can support people.
We hear, don't we? I mean, there's so much in the press even now about equal pay. And quite often a story we hear chimed out again and again and again is that women don't ask for raises. In your experience, would you agree with that statement? Are women less forthcoming in asking for more money at work?
I don't think so. I suppose it depends of what time of their career it is. And this is where some of the work that I've been doing on menopause has really kind of come to the fore, and recognising that a lot of women are in very good career positions as they kind of head into their 40s. But in actual fact, that's a time when they're really hit with this menopause transition. And what you see is a loss of confidence. Mm. I know I experienced it, and I had no idea why I should suddenly feel unconfident about what I was doing and how I was working. There's no reason for it. And so I can recognise that actually at times like that, women are feeling less confident to necessarily ask about pay rises, but it's about their circumstance and we're not recognising that.
I definitely want to talk more about the work you're doing around menopause, but I want to join up, I suppose, the dots from you being in London and having a really successful and long career down south. You then came back to the north. What was that decision based on?
That was really based on personal things. You know, my family are at the north, my partner's family are in the north as well. And so actually we wanted to head back so that we could spend more time with family, so that my children could actually see more of the extended family and have that time. And the opportunities are there. So we actually moved with my role, and there's a lot more opportunities for me now in the north.
So you transitioned from the corporate world to the academic world. Tell me about your role now.
So it's working at the University of Bradford, which is fantastic. It's all about education for everybody. I mean, we've just achieved Times Higher University of the Year for Social Inclusion. So it's incredibly inclusive environment, which is fantastic. And it's the transition that people sort of said, oh, has it been a bit slow moving to academia? And actually, you know what? It's not. It's about having really interesting discussions, moving things forward, and taking things into account in a much broader space than I have necessarily in other organisations.
And it shows as well the fact that you can transfer skills from one sector to another, because quite often people look for a career change and think, but are my skills transferable? Would I be able to move into that sector because I haven't got the history within that environment? You say you can.
Yes, because it's all about, we work with people, and actually people are everywhere, and you see similar issues, you see different issues, but just in a different setting.
Yeah. So tell me then about the work you've been doing at Bradford University around the menopause. First of all, why is it something you've become so passionate about?
It's twofold. I work supporting the Faculty of Health Studies, and they have a lot of women. The faculty is majority female, and a lot of women over 40. In fact, the university population of the university, the majority are over 40. 68% of the staff are over 40. And so it was really working with a group of sort of saying, wait a minute, we're sat in meetings and we're seeing people exhibit all menopause things like opening windows, closing windows, forgetting words, forgetting sentences, getting other people to finish off something for them. And you suddenly sat there going, wait a minute, we're all doing this, kind of helping each other, but actually, does everybody know what this means and how to support each other? Mm. And so really the guidelines came out of there. And also my personal experience, I started to experience really bad symptoms this year of menopause transition. And I realised I got to the point where I was actually starting to think, should I be looking up early onset dementia? That I was just forgetting all the time, just didn't know what I was saying sometimes. And I was just like, oh my God, I've forgotten things. And what is it all about? And in actual fact, I was doing the work about menopause. I realized I myself, I'm going through this menopause transition, but the information out there is well, it's the internet, isn't it? What's real, what isn't. Yeah. So there's information out there, but you're not sure you can trust it. And actually there's very little out there in terms of actually supporting staff in the workplace and what you can do to actually support staff going through that transition. And so we've been working on guidelines and supporting documents around that. And at the same time, I think CIPD have actually brought out their guidelines. But yes, it's
CIPD,
been,
sorry?
Chartered Institute of Personnel and Development have also brought out guidelines to help employers. So we've gone out there, we've created our guidelines, we've run information sessions for staff. Staff have literally kind of gone, it's amazing. I had difficult meetings with my manager asking me what was wrong and I didn't want to talk about it. I didn't know how to start the conversation. And now I can go back and have that conversation again and say, I need help and support. We also have run some sessions for our staff. We have a very large group of Indian and Pakistani women who work for the university. And actually, there's a lot of cultural sensitivities around menopause in those communities. Certainly in Urdu, there's no specific words around menopause. Gosh. Seems really weird because it's not something new. It's not like the internet is a new word. It's something that's been around as long as women have. So it's absolutely fascinating. So we've run sessions very specific to them that they've actually worked with us and sort of say, how are we going to get the best out of this session? And we've worked with them to design sessions to help them and give them access to the information. And it's been fantastic.
Amazing. Tell me about you, if you will, Kate, because you've talked about getting symptoms. Can you tell us a bit more about what you went through physically and mentally? Because as you pointed out, a lot of women listening to this might be experiencing lots of things and not realising what it is.
Well, I mean, unbelievably, there's over 30 symptoms. It's absolutely mind-blowing. But personally, for me, I get the hot sweats. I tend to get them more in a night. I have nights when I don't sleep. I'm awake at 2 and that's it for the day. And after 3 or 4 days of that, that sleep deprivation really builds up. Yeah. I started to feel panicky and anxious about things that I've never felt about before. Like driving my car in a strange place and thinking, I've never felt unconfident about that. I've driven around London. And why would I suddenly feel unconfident about driving 20 minutes down the road? Yeah. I started to forget things at work and quite important things that I have never forgotten in my life. And I would forget conversations. And I'm like, how on earth have I done that? What is happening to me? So I was like, seriously thinking, am I able to do my job? And in actual fact, with a few adjustments, I found it very easy. I now take my laptop with me everywhere. I go to every meeting, every time. I sit down, I make notes on my laptop. Then I don't lose any bits of paper. I can search to find out what I've done. I can put tasks straight on there. And the only thing I do is somebody stops me in the corridor. I'm like, right, I can't have this conversation. Let's go and sit down so I can have my laptop and I make a note of it. And it's actually small adjustments to actually kind of make it easier to be able to work in the workplace. And I mean I've chosen to be very open about it. Not everybody is, and that's a personal choice.
Yes,
but I've chosen to be because I'm trying to get the conversation started here, and if I'm going to get the conversation started, then I need to be the one to do it. So quite often I'll stand there. I presented at a menopause training session at right at the beginning. I was doing the intro and I forgot what I was saying, and I was literally like going, I'm really sorry, Pop, I actually forgotten what I was saying. And the women in the room, they were all nodding. And somebody was saying, yeah, I've been there. And it's like, do you know what? We're all in this situation. It's not just the women, it's the men as well. Think of how many men are actually going through this through their wives or through their sisters or through their mothers or friends as well. You know, this isn't just a women issue. This is men are as equally impacted. Men love the wives. Yeah. People have said to me, why would men come to the session? It's like, that man might love his wife or might love his sister, and why wouldn't they come? you know, same-sex couples, imagine two women going through the menopause at the same time. It's going to be really, really difficult. And to provide a space where they can speak and talk is really important. Probably noticed I've just stumbled over some words. That's another thing I find. I actually slur my words and stumble my words quite a lot, which sounds really weird. And you're trying to present to people and they're looking at you thinking, So now I just say, it's my mena brain kicking in and hope that people understand.
Well, the fact that you are owning your own menopause is exactly the point here, isn't it? I mean, like you said, not everyone has to do this. Not everyone will feel able to do this. But the fact you can say, look, I'm going to be honest with you, this is why this is going on, it almost takes the power away from the stumbles, from the forgetfulness, from all the things that caused you distress before. You now think, I think quite often with distress, you get distressed because you don't know why you're distressed. And now you can go, yes. Oh, I know why I feel that way. Okay, move
exactly.
on.
Exactly. Exactly. I know what it is. You know, I've also started to get the middle age spread. I trained for a half marathon and ran a half marathon this year. Did I lose any weight? No. But I feel better and healthier. And at least I know I'm owning it. It's not owning me.
What would you like to see happen in the bigger picture here? What would you like to see implemented by organisations or companies?
It's not just the guidelines. Do you know what? Everybody can trot out documents and put them out and say, here you go, here's some information. It's actually having the courage to have the conversations, to actually talk about how can we support you as women at this difficult time? What can we do? We might put in place big, reasonable adjustments, but there's just the small ones that sort of say, actually, I'm supposed to be doing a load of data analysis today. Can I just do something else? Because my brain's a bit foggy and I'm really struggling to concentrate. Quiet spaces where people can go and work because they just can't cope with all the noise and gubbins going on. But also about actually having it as a free subject. It's still taboo. Yeah. There are women who have said to me, why are you doing this? Women shouldn't be talking about this. This is not a taboo subject. Children go into puberty and they know what it's about. Women go into menopause, are in the middle of it, and they've no idea what's going on. It's a massive lack of knowledge about an impact that impacts half our population and will impact them in their life directly and indirectly impacts the other half. So what I want to see is this becomes a common word, a common discussion, and actually it's not a big thing. It's just another part of the working day.
That's brilliant advice. I wonder if women are listening to this who a few of the things that you've said have sort of piqued their interest, have maybe sparked something in their brains about something they may be going through. What advice would you give to them now if they're thinking, that might be me, but I do not know where to begin?
Okay, I've worked with a few organisations. There's one organisation called Henpicked, and they've got some great advice online. That's Henpicked, not Henpecked. There's another, Meg's Menopause. I think Meg Matthews has hit this and realised the lack of information. So she's got another great site. And there are some great advice pieces online. The Charles Hughes Institute of Personal Development, CIPD, has some great documents that help employers and employees think about that. And ACAS have also brought out some guidelines so people can start to think about it. But go and seek and talk to their support groups all over the place. So have a look around, see if you can find a local support group and go and have a talk with them. There's a lot of really good information out there and some fantastic sources. And if you want, people can contact me.
And how do they do that?
My email address is kate.rogers2, and that's Rogers without a D, @bradford.ac.uk.
Thank you to Kate Rogers from the University of Bradford with some fantastic advice and also a great invitation for you to get in touch with her directly if you'd like any more information. Brilliant stuff. Whose life and career would you love to know more about? Do let us know, please. Email podcast@northernpowerwomen.com. Now it's time for Ask the Hive. It's a place where if you have a question or a concern, you're not alone. You have the whole Northern Power Women hive mind to help you find a solution. This month, should she stay or should she go?
I left my last job just after 6 months as my boyfriend got a job in another town and we moved. Now I hate my new job, but I've only been here 6 months. Will it look terrible if I move again so soon or should I stick it out?
I think to me, if you think that there's nothing else you can get out of the job, there's nothing left for you to contribute, then you need to be selfish. Go for your own career and go to where suits you best.
Should I stick the job out after 6 months? My answer would be yes. Today we're very much project oriented in the workforce. Some projects last 3 months, some projects last 6 months. My growth personally came from working on multiple projects across multiple clients and workplaces, leading to my final role here as Delivery Manager DTC. And without those projects and that experience, I wouldn't have gotten to where I am today.
My advice would be that if it's not the job for you and it's not the environment for you, then there is no point in wasting time sticking with something that doesn't make you happy and you don't find fulfilling. And so that if you're able to justify that change to a new employer, then I don't think any employer would have a problem with you looking for new challenges and looking for a more satisfying environment. In fact, if anything, it would show you the kind of person who doesn't accept mediocrity.
I think you spend a lot of your, well, most of your life working, so if you're in a role or a position that you're not happy in, then definitely leave and pursue something else.
I would advise that you leave your job if you're not happy there. If you're not happy at work, it has a massive impact on your overall well-being and also your ability to perform well at work. You can explain why that you've just moved to a new area, so you could explain why you've got two jobs in a short space of time on your CV, but I would definitely go on and do a job that you enjoy.
My opinion on this one is that if you're really unhappy, it's better to just leave. I think you'll be able to pursue your passion and have more success in a new job.
I don't think looking for another job after 6 months would be detrimental to your career whatsoever. I think you've got to go out and do what you love and just be authentic and be yourself and use your skills to go out there in the world and make a difference. You go for it.
I think that's pretty unanimous, don't you, in what you should do. Really good luck in your decision in your career. Thank you for getting in touch. And of course, if you have a question for Ask the Hive, just send us an email, podcast@northernpowerwomen.com. Now, next month, your Northern Power Women shout-outs are back. It's a perfect place to showcase someone who you think has gone the extra mile, stuck their head above the parapet, or made a difference in their sector. Perhaps they deserve more praise than they've received. That is where you come in. All you need to do is record a voice memo on your phone. Tell us who you are, who they are, and why they deserve a shout-out. You can then email podcast@northernpowerwomen.com. Or, of course, you can also come along to one of our upcoming events and tell us there. Check out Twitter @NorthPowerWomen or online northernpowerwomen.com for all the details. Well, there we go for yet another month, the final month of 2019 of advice, stories and ideas. Huge thank you to you for listening and all your support in 2019. It means so much to us. If you can tell just one person over the Christmas period about the podcast, it's going to make a real difference to how many more people can join the conversation. And of course, as ever, I know you always hear it, but a like or a review, you can't imagine what difference it makes. So a huge thank you if you have time to do that as well. Save the date. The next episode arrives on Friday, January the 3rd, 2020. Blimey. Until then, very happy Christmas, a very happy new year to you. This is the Northern Power Women podcast. I'm Sam Walker, and this has been a What Goes On Media production for Northern Power Women.